Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast. On this show, we will focus on strengthening women's mental fitness through sharing the joy, struggle, and wisdom of each woman's journey. Our show is powered by Pivotal Moments. Go to pivotalmoments.org to learn more. Hello, and welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast. This podcast is powered by Pivotal Moments Media. I'm your host, Sandy Ludden. And today we're going to talk about some really interesting topics here. And I've got no stranger to this show. She's a friend of our show. You've seen her on future episodes. Certified life coach, Beth Shahey. Welcome, Beth.
Hey, it's great to be here. I'm so excited. This is going to be a fun one.
I am as well. And for those of you who have tuned in before and heard Beth, you know that number one, she is an extraordinary life coach. And I can say that from experience because she is my own personal life coach. And she always brings brilliant insights to every discussion I ever have with her. So I'm super excited to be talking about this today. You know, Beth, this podcast is really focused on helping people to really understand the importance of mental wellness and making that a part of your everyday life. Mm-hmm. And we like to talk about that in a variety of different ways. And, you know, ultimately, we just want to equip people to be able to, you know, thrive and be successful in times of chaos and uncertainty, which, hey, that's life, right? It happens. Right. Yeah. We all go through it. So this discussion today, I think, is going to be really, really interesting because one of the things that I love about you, but also it bugs me so much, and that's my own personal challenge, is that you always ask me, well, Sandy, how does that make you feel? And how, you know, is that true? And I hate that question. I hate it so much because it is so difficult for me personally. And I'm sure not everyone feels this way, but for me personally, it is talking about my feelings and putting my feelings into words is hard. It's very hard. And oftentimes I find that I also kind of shut it down. Like, I don't want to think about what my feelings are saying right now or how I'm feeling. I just need to keep moving forward and I'll deal with that and worry about that later.
Right.
And that's why I love this topic that we're talking about today, which is I'm so excited about, is Brené Brown's new book, Atlas of the Heart, where she really gets into the language and how to put language and communication to your feelings. And for those of you who don't know Brené Brown, who've been sleeping under a rock for these past years, she is a research professional, research professor, and she is really focused on helping us find strength and vulnerability. And Brené is an five-time number one New York Times bestseller. She's got one of the most listened to TED Talks ever. And she's also got a great Netflix special that really digs into courage and vulnerability. And I highly recommend anything that she has written, talked about, whatever. It's always so insightful. So Beth and I decided it would be really interesting for our audience to kind of have us kind of dig into this book. We both wanted to read it. We both were excited about it and really start to, you know, do something a little bit different this time and really dig into this book and how it impacts all of us. So Beth, I'm going to ask you kind of, can you just give us a little synopsis about what the overall theme of this book is?
Yeah, absolutely. And for anybody watching, I thought we just need to show the cover because I don't know about you, Sandy, but first of all, I think the cover is beautiful. Second of all, it's like a coffee table book. This isn't one you want to get on, you know, audio maybe, because if you get it, you want to feel it and the pages feel good. And I love some of the graphics in it. Anyway,
great visuals in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think she really hit a home run by making this a book that's different because it is different. And I think even Glennon Doyle said it should be the family Bible or anybody's Bible. So this could be a Bible that we put on our coffee table, because this is the kind of conversation that is going to help us literally come together and connect to ourselves and others in a way that we all need so desperately right now. So yes, Atlas of the Heart. It is all about understanding our inner selves so that we can connect to others. And I really believe that when we're clear on what we're feeling or thinking, we're just more grounded. And when we have that sort of confidence, we can not only tell our story, but interpret and understand better the stories that we hear. And so in this book, there are 13 key themes and 87 emotions that she literally goes word for word and defines. Isn't that crazy?
Who knew? I mean, I think at one point she calls out, like, if you ask the average person how many emotions there are, they would say, three, yeah. Happy, sad, and anger, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And she even mentions that, you know, we as people like big buckets, she called it. And she said, most of us identify when we're happy, sad, angry, and that's it. But there's more nuance to it. And the more accurately we can define that, the better we can regulate it, not only for ourselves, but others. And she talks about the granularity of language and getting down to it is really helpful. And something you said earlier, Sandy, is so true. We are taught to suppress our emotions in our lives, in our families, in our relationships. You know, in my family, although I think it served us well, we had the power of positive thinking. So everything was be positive. We had stickers in our house. We had things all over the place. And my dad was a salesman and a very successful one. So when you're a salesman, you have to be positive, right? So the entire feeling was, you know, you might be feeling something, but, you know, don't worry because everything's going to turn out okay. Everything happens for a reason. Be positive. And so I think, I was lucky enough to have an okay situation with that. But a lot of times we push and we push and we push and we try to disguise and we try to, just push it down in a way that we don't even know how to get to the root of our feelings because we've been asked to be out of touch with them, to live in a world where we, you know, don't even express that kind of conversation. So it's very interesting.
It is. And it's so true what you just said, because we are products of our environment, right?
Yeah.
And even in the intro, Brené really gets into the details of her own childhood and the household she grew up in. Yeah. But it is true. It is, at least for me, it was, you know, like things are crazy and intense, but we got to keep moving forward. So just move forward. And,
right.
And you know, that's been a theme in my life, right?
Right. Yeah. So, you know, when we say we're feeling sad, we kind of just move forward. Okay. I'm sad, but it could be grief. It could be disappointment. It could be, two words I learned that I'm so excited about, Schadenfreude and Freudenfreude.
I'm glad you said those, because I was like, I don't think I can pronounce. Well,
I Googled it and said, how do you pronounce?
That was smart.
Schadenfreude. But yeah, I mean, there's so much more to it. And the thing about emotion, and Brené talks about this, is that we think when we name it, it gives it power. Mm. We're so afraid to say, I'm feeling jealousy. Because we think, oh, that defines us, that gives it power and it gets bigger in us. But Brené and her research and all the people that have helped her to, you know, kind of look at this topic have really said, you know, actually when we say it out loud, it comes off of us immediately. And it gives us the ability to know. So instead of feeling envy or jealousy or whatever, we take it off of ourselves and call it what it is. We look at it and we say, huh, that's interesting. Now I have a choice to make a change because I've called it what it is. So it takes the power away actually from the emotion and puts it right back in ourselves, the power to make that change. And I just love that. Ah,
I remember reading that part, that section. And I remember thinking, if I had not worked with Beth in the way that I have to really identify my own feelings and what I'm going through, I don't know that I would have fully believed that, but now that I have actually put that to task and called out, named my feelings, it's absolutely true. At least it has been for me, in that it didn't give it power. It actually just helped me to understand and to process. And then it felt way smaller than what I was actually making it.
Right.
So I can say I've actually put that to the task, and it absolutely does work. It takes the power away from that. And I think that's really insightful.
And essentially we just become a witness, right? We become a witness to what's happening rather than allowing it to blend with who we are and define us. And it's a lovely skill to learn. Definitely. Yeah. And in the end, the more that we know about ourselves, you know, and I think what Brené's really saying is, and she says on the front, mapping meaningful connection and the language of human experience. And that's what this is all about. So let's dig in.
Yeah,
talk to me a little bit more about what you're excited about so far.
Yeah. So, I mean, actually you just called it out because I actually I'm opening the book now because I've got notes everywhere. But this really resonated with me. And this is at the, this is before she even launches into the book. This is part of the intro, but she basically says, and I'm going to read this part and then I might paraphrase some of it, but to form meaningful connections with others, we must first connect with ourselves.
Yes.
I'm not sure I fully understood that before, but I do know that to be true. And I've spent the past couple of years really working on myself and understanding myself and who I am and why I react the way I react and, you know, things like that. But it's interesting. This is the part that was like such a wow moment for me. And it says, but first we must establish a common understanding of our own emotions and our own human experience before we can even fully understand ourselves. So
yes,
it's not just about talking to others about how you feel and engaging them, but it's really talking to yourself.
Yes.
And engaging with yourself and understanding your own feelings first.
Yeah.
Before you can really deepen those connections with others. And I mean, if that isn't a life lesson, because yeah, let's be honest, life is about connecting with others. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know, you know, we've come out of a pandemic and we've really, you know, spent a lot of time being isolated, especially just with our families. But the bottom line is we are social and emotional beings and we have right to connect with each other. And, you know, we talk about, you see a lot of divisiveness in our country and in politics and things like that. And I know Brené gets into a little bit of that. That's one of the reasons why maybe we're seeing that. It's because we haven't really learned how to communicate our feelings to one another and really deepen that engagement.
Yeah.
So to me, just the intro alone had such a yes wow moment. I was like, wow, yeah, that really got me excited and wanting to really dig into the rest of the book because I was like, that's so true, right? That's
yeah,
there's so much there in those two statements.
Absolutely. And I, like you, Sandy, have been working also in my own personal development in the last few years. I've sunk in, I've gotten curious. I've shown myself compassion where I was a little ashamed of some of the things that I was feeling once I was really honest. But then once I was able to clearly identify this energy was just, I could feel it swelling in my chest. And it got to the space where I'm like, I want more of that. I want more truth. I want to be in my integrity. I want to live in who I am as an individual, so that everything I say, I mean, and everything I feel, I express, and everything that, you know, I go forward with, I'm excited that this is my life. And what I realized is that when I gave that to myself, I was then easily able to give it to other people.
That's so interesting.
My mom has always had in her signature on her email, you never know what people are going through. I think it's a quote by somebody. I'm terrible. It's a knee. I forget her name. But anyway, and you never know what people are going through, so give them a break. It's kind of paraphrasing.
Yeah.
And as I've learned more about myself, I've thought, gosh, if I'm looking at someone and wondering why they're a certain way or acting out, or, you know, if I'm watching someone at the grocery store and I think, heavens, you know, all of a sudden the grace that I'm giving, the lens that I have, the perspective, and Brené talks about this, the limit of my language is the limit of my world. And I would say the limit of my perspective is the limit of my world. Once I open that up for myself, I'm able to open it up for others, give grace, be love, and really be present with them in a way that just fills me up. And the energy is reciprocal. You know, it's such a beautiful thing.
So there's so much to unpack in what you just said. First, you said, you know, you were doing your own self-development and you started to get curious about yourself and to show yourself compassion. And, you know, I think it's so important to recognize that this is not a decision you make, right? This is not I'm going to just be more curious and I'm just going to not be so hard on myself. This takes work.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you have to really dig into why you're feeling what you're feeling.
Right.
And you're right. And I think one of the best parts of this type of work for me has been, first of all, it's hard. I can honestly say I don't necessarily enjoy it,
right?
But I am learning from it that I actually, once I really start to dig in and understand myself better, I like myself better.
Right. Yeah.
And absolutely. It's like, I know that sounds kind of silly, but I've really started to learn to love and like who I am. But it's also helped me, as you just pointed out, to learn and like others even more. Right. And so it's just funny how that evolution happens once we really start to figure out our own selves. But it is, I think, so important that it is work and it's not easy work, but it is worth every ounce of effort you have to put in to really get to that space. And I'm not saying it's a destination. I think it's always an evolution, and it's something that is so worth constantly working on.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Absolutely.
So,
all right. So what else in this intro were we pumped about? They talk a lot about maps, and that was super cool. First of all, I love maps. I don't know about you, Sandy.
I do too.
But when I go places, I'll zoom out of my way so I can see the bigger picture. Again, the limits of my map is a limit of my world. I like to see where I am. If I'm in the middle of Virginia, you know, where's the ocean? Where's, you know, Richmond? I like to see it, right?
And oh, totally.
I think they're super cool because, and it says, I think the quote in the book is that they help us know where we are, how do we get there, and how we can get here to there or get from here to there. And so the concept of maps, and they talked about biology and biography, behavior, and backstory. And when I work with clients, so many of those things, you know, come up in conversation, who you are in the world, how you show up, getting curious about, like you had talked about earlier, family of origin and how our social self was, you know, was shaped and looked at in our culture. Examining, you know, what are we doing on a daily basis? If we, you know, if what is our behavior? I think that's so fascinating. And the backstory, which is the context of what you're feeling and thinking. And so all of that is like our map. And I just think that was a super cool way because, man, when I'm untethered, literally like psychologically, the only thing that I can do to get tethered is start thinking about some of those basic B's that Brené talks about.
So I have to share with you one of my most recent experiences leveraging a map. When we go, I just went skiing with my family up in New Hampshire. And when we go skiing, you know, you've got the first thing my son does is look at the map of the slopes. He wants to know where he's going, what he wants to do, what slopes, what runs do I want to take, the whole thing. So I look at it from a different lens. I look at it from the lens of what slopes do I want to make sure I avoid? Which ones do I don't want to accidentally find myself on, right? So I also take a look at those maps because for me, the worst case scenario would to be on a doing a run that I did not intend to do because it was way beyond my level of skill. Right. So, but isn't that life though? Because as we start to learn ourselves and learn those emotions and how we react and respond to things, it helps us to avoid those situations or avoid going down a path with someone that is going to create an inflamed situation or those unintended consequences that you find when you go down a path. You're like, oh, I never intended to go down that path, but, you know, found yourself there. And so that's why I love, again, that she used the map correlation, because I do think that is really interesting. And it's really about how we navigate through our interactions, through our day, you know, engaging with people. So I do think that was... is a very meaningful illustration.
Yeah, absolutely. The metaphor is just spot on because when you think about looking at maps, you know, you know, I've thought about when you put it all out on a table and you start tracing and, you know, you have to find the highway and you figure out, well, do we want to go highways? Do we want to go toll roads? Do we want to go the scenic route? How much time will it take? And, you know, we used to have measure what an inch was to miles and guesstimate. Well, I drive a little fast. Maybe it's a little more than 60 miles per hour, but you know, now we put it in ways and it's pretty much, we buzz off Like we don't even think about it. And so just even that metaphor of, you know, how much research do we do? How much planning do we do? How many choices can we make? Or how much do we let things do it for us? Mm-hmm. You know, and the cool thing about Waze is it'll tell us if there's cops or accidents, it'll reroute us, it'll do all kinds of things. And that tool is lovely. But sometimes, you know, it takes us away from something that might be exactly where we were supposed to go for reasons we don't even understand, you know?
Right.
So I think it's fascinating. And the other thing that I love about this metaphor is, she talks about so often we look for the nearest shore when we're drowning, but that shore is actually within us. And, she talks about, you know, we're searching for that connection and that connection is very real. And so we're constantly looking, but once we find it within us, we're no longer looking. We can literally lay back and float for a little while and look up and look around and feel the warmth of the water. Once we connect with ourselves in that way, we're able to relax into who we are. And I just love that metaphor too.
I do too. And I think that says so much about if you're filling those voids and finding that in yourself, you're not looking for the people around you to fill it now. So your relationship changes with them. There's less of a dependence on the people around you and more of a independence. And then the nature of the relationship completely changes at that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's interesting to me, and it's no surprise to me at all that the first three chapters deal with stress, being overwhelmed, and uncertain, dealing with uncertainty in your life, right? I mean, that's really the heart, I would say, of the first three chapters. And that's no surprise because let's be honest, those are the things that can derail us the most, right?
Yeah.
And have the most negative impact on us mentally, emotionally, physically, even if gone unchecked. And so she really digs into that. And again, like I said, it was just no surprise.
Right.
Absolutely. Exactly. Those are the first three things you must tackle, right?
Yeah. And, you know, for those of you that don't have it right in front of you, the places we go when things are uncertain or too much, chapter one, chapter two, the places we go when we compare, and chapter three, when the places we go when things don't go as planned, right? So all three of those things, yeah, they're very much like you. I was not surprised because these are very normal, everyday things that we do on a daily basis that, you know, it's really important to explore right from the start. Let's go for it. So yeah, I think it's pretty cool. All right. So in chapter one, she talks about stress, overwhelm, anxiety, worry, avoidance, excitement, dread, fear, vulnerability, which of course we all know is her expertise.
Right. Exactly. And you know, these are things that everyone faces, right? Yeah. This isn't unique to certain individuals. These are things that everyone has to deal with and learn to deal with. And I think I always think of when I think of vulnerability, and you know, vulnerability is a fear, right? It's essentially based in fear. It's we are uncertain, right? And I think a lot of that comes from us really like those uncertain circumstances. But I think of Sheryl Sandberg's words of lean in. And I've heard so many people say, especially performers, right? There's that nervousness you get or that anxiety you get before performing, whether it's you're singing or giving a speech or whatever. And I've seen people do this over the years, they get this energy. But, you know, one of the best words of wisdom that I got was, you know, use that, lean into that, use that and make that part of your strength. And I think that's what Brené is basically saying too, is it's okay to be vulnerable, but this is kind of a new message, right? I mean, we haven't been hearing this our entire lives.
Right.
As a matter of fact, you've heard the complete opposite. It's not okay to be vulnerable and you can't, it's weakness, but that's not what Brené is saying. She's like, no, actually that is strength. And one of the great examples that I noticed in the book, and this meant so much to me having worked in the corporate world all those years, but you know, I think you're always afraid a bit to mess up, make a mistake, say something, ask a question that may sound stupid. And, you know, it's almost like we've created this environment in the workforce where you can't show weakness, you know, you can't, you don't want to do that because then someone might call you out, And then there's shame associated with it. And then you're like, oh no. But what she says really happens in that environment is like, we've created this perfectionist environment, and therefore everyone's fearful of making a mistake, and therefore it squashes any and all creativity and innovation.
Yeah.
And yeah. I thought, wow, that is so true, because right, in order to be creative and innovative and come up with new ideas and try new things, you got to be vulnerable.
Yes.
And I think that's really her message around that, is that's why it is a strength, because it can create so many great new opportunities for you if you just let yourself go there.
Yeah.
And so I thought that, to me, that one was a really powerful message from the book, because, you know, and our audience, you've got a lot of people who are working in a lot of different environments. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm working in my own environment, you know, with work, my own company, sometimes all alone with no one to bounce ideas off of. And then I get a little afraid. I'm like, when I am on a call and collaborating with people, I'm like, oh, is that a good idea? Is that not? I don't know what to say. Uh-huh. You know, sometimes I find myself a little fearful of wanting to put myself out there. And then, you know, lo and behold, you do it. And someone might say, well, this is why that won't work in this situation. But then other times you find, and this happened to me this week, where everyone was like, that's a brilliant idea. And I'm like, oh, wow, really?
Yay, good. They like me. They really like me.
Right. What a win that was. But if you don't take that opportunity to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Right.
And vulnerability is an interesting thing, because people have to earn it. Brené talks about that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to, vulnerability doesn't mean you just go outside and tell everybody everything. It's people that deserve to hear that. And I've had different situations in my life where, you know, I've put myself out there and I definitely was misconstrued, or felt like, and I thought, you know what, you don't need to know these things. I can pull back. And it reminds me, when you were talking, Sandy, there was a time, one of my very first jobs when I was young, I worked as an event planner for a very large historical place. And I was rocking and rolling and really feeling good about it. And I was probably maybe 4 or 5 months in, and I didn't say much in the meeting because it was kind of out of my realm, you know, out of my expertise, but I knew I was good at this. And then at one point I kind of just offered a suggestion. I said, well, you know, this is something a lot of my clients have been asking for. Might we be able to do it this way? And I remember my supervisor looked at me in front of a staff of maybe 20 people across the room and said, what makes you think you have any levity to be able to speak at our meetings?
What?
It was fascinating, because I shrunk. I could feel everything about me. I just wanted to slither under the table and die. Like, I couldn't. And I thought, there's nobody here that had real seniority over me. People that definitely had many years ahead of me. And mm-hmm. I was newer on the staff, but you know, I was raised, as I said earlier, to be positive and to do amazing things. And you can, if you think you can, and set your sights high. So I never thought I couldn't speak. And I remember that guy, and I still remember his name. I remember my husband beat him up, but I remember that feeling. And you know, what's interesting is sometimes, Sandy, things like that happen in our lives that create a response. And I mean, my body started literally responding when you were talking about it, because I thought to myself, that's exactly what happened to me. So sometimes we have a trauma that happens in our life that we hold on to that doesn't allow us to be vulnerable. I mean, there were many, many times after that, I would think to myself, should I speak up? Should I not? Should I, am I okay here? Is this safe? Is it not? Of course, I've worked on it over the years. I don't have that anymore. But did I still have a physical reaction thinking about that moment? Absolutely. And so that's part of that, digging deeper. Well, heavens, who is he to tell me that? He's got nothing on me. He doesn't deserve me or my vulnerability, or for that matter, my kick-ass skills.
That's right.
We've moved on, and that's, you know, but it's fascinating how puzzly we are, right? Like that's a made up word, but we're like a puzzle, each one of us, and what makes us, and that's back to that map of who are we and how are we constructed and how do we define it and bring mm-hmm. it out into the world.
You know, it's interesting what else that I gather from what you just said too. And Brené talks about this as well. You just described how that made you feel, mm-hmm. right? How his response made you feel. And it's so interesting, because it left you, it it had an effect on you, right? And probably not so much a positive effect. Mm-hmm. But if you think about where he was coming from, and I'm by no means justifying his behavior, because I don't think that's right, because I do think other perspectives are so valuable, and that's, you know, getting a different perspective at the table, which is why I love having people in the room who don't have the same knowledge right. and skill set that right. I do, because they're going to make me think in a way that I haven't thought before. But this individual probably had his own insecurity mm-hmm. around does she think she's smarter than me? Right. So that's, he's dealing with something inside of him right. and can't say necessarily what that was, but I can imagine. I've been in my own situation where I felt intimidated maybe. Uh-huh. And I hope I didn't respond that way to anybody or make anyone feel that way, but we do experience it from each yeah. other. And again, right. I think that's what she's talking about, is being able to recognize each other's feelings yes. in a way that you can engage in a more productive way.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And it's about two people in their own internal space colliding with one another. And so mm-hmm. communicating that, you know, creating a connection is really what we're going for. That's what allows us to be in better conversation, to live life better, to be not only authentically ourselves, but authentically ourselves together in a world. Yes. And I think, you know, that's what's necessary. So, I think it's fascinating to think about it like that. You know, all these specks in the world are just floating around, and how can we best be together?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think sometimes too, again, this all comes back to you're a product of your environment. And then she talks about in chapter one, it's, you know, when things are uncertain or feel overwhelming and too much, mm-hmm. recognizing how we respond then is critical. And that's when the work really has to be done, because that's when you're most likely going to go down a path you may regret. Ultimately.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And I know I've talked about this in the past on this podcast with you and with you individually, is, you know, I feel like things are swirling around me and it's that swirl of chaos. And then I'm like, I can't function. What do I do?
Right.
Right. And you've taught me to say, okay, what's really going on here? And taking that moment to stop mm-hmm. and think and pause and drive, like really start to think, gain that awareness.
Yeah.
So for people who maybe didn't hear that discussion you and I had previously, share a little bit about that. Like, what's a great way for us to just, when things are starting to swirl like that, like kind of ground ourselves?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the basic exercise of just taking a breath, you know, people say, go take a breather, or, you know, breathe, you know, give three breaths or something like that. It's actually true. When we take those kind of breaths, it indicates to our brain that we're safe in that moment mm-hmm. and it really grounds us. And so, you know, I can picture a time even at my kitchen counter when things were happening and there was a swirl around, and I was worrying about all sorts of things, you know, the holidays and wrapping things up with work and, you know, trying to get groceries and trying to make sure that, you know, this client was taken care of and all that, you know, all these things. Right. And I remember, you know, one kid coming in and asking about dinner, another kid coming in and asking about a ride. And I remember just feeling that moment. And I remember being in it, and it took a breath. And I literally, as I breathed in, when I exhaled, I sort of just created a space as if I was a bird above the whole situation and I could see what was happening. So I was breathing space between me and what was happening. So all of a sudden, I was the witness to this and I was saying, wow, holy cow, I am really worked up. What is this about? And so when we create that space between what we're feeling and ourselves, we're able to see it for what it is. And we're able to, you know, walk back the cat is a tool that I use. What is this really about? Is it about that? No. Is it about that? No. Oh, I'm feeling unappreciated. Oh, I'm feeling like I have a lot on my plate and others don't really, maybe they take me for granted. That's my issue. That's where that swirl comes from. So the easier that we can get present, the more we pull back, the more we can really see what it is. And so it starts with something as simple as a few breaths or feeling your heartbeat, or even, you know, finding the bubbles the prism on the bubbles in the soap, anything that you immediately your senses can notice that brings you into the moment mm-hmm. and takes you away from that, as you said, this like hurricane of emotions. The power of presence is truly what we need in those moments.
So, wow, that was really good. That was so powerful. And it's so true, because it is about uncertainty and not knowing what's going on and what's going to happen next. And like you said, you're going to feel a lot of emotions at that point.
Right.
And it's really being able to, like you said, like
pause,
and you always ask me, is that true? You know, you said, cause you got things like, oh, I'm not feeling appreciated. Are you really not? Is that true? Are you really not appreciated? And then when you really start to think about it, you're like, no, I think these folks probably do appreciate me, but maybe they didn't understand what I was saying. Right. It gives you a moment to really reflect on that. And it's funny because there's so many thoughts happening in our minds all at the same time. So it's almost like, you know, you're not taking 30 minutes to figure this out.
No,
it's 30 seconds, right? It's just in the moment. Yeah.
And that, you know, you said it a couple of times, but I say it to myself a lot throughout the day. I'll have a thought and I'll immediately say, is it true? If it's causing me any kind of pain or suffering, I have to ask myself that, because there are things that do cause pain that are true. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you 99% of what I think in a day is not true. And it is a quick little reality check. Beth, is that true? No, it's not true. You know, you're so right that our emotions and the way that we show up in the world, Brené has a line in the book that says, my emotions are responding to my thinking assessment of how well I can handle something. So if we feel stress or overwhelmed, it's because we think that we can't handle this, right? And so we all have different thresholds. And I love when she's talking about learning at being when she was a waitress, about being in the weeds or blown. Sandy, I've used this for my kids already. I mean, I had one come down last night and was so upset about accidentally cutting a bead strand that was a bracelet, and she didn't realize it. She thought it was a bead strand, and she got all kind of bent out of shape. And I said, boy, oh boy, you know, I read something recently about being in the weeds and being blown. And I it's about perspective. Are you, when our mind says, I am really stressed about this, is it a temporary thing? Is it just something that's now where, you know, I'm stressed? Or is it, I literally know that I can't handle this and I'm overwhelmed and I need to tap out and let someone else, like Brené says, handle my tables. So again, that power of the pause to recognize how big is this really? Is it a mountain or a molehill? And if it's a molehill, okay, this stinks. We're going to get through it. It'll be fine in a day. If it's a mountain, we look at it differently. And we say, I'm really blown here. I'm overwhelmed. I'm not sure if I can handle what's currently happening. But it all comes back to our thinking of how we think we can perform in those moments.
Yes.
We challenge it. We have to ask, is it true that I can't handle this situation?
And I love that you brought up like a situation with your child, because I have twins, boy, girl twins. And the other day, my son Luke said to me, he's very self-aware, which blows my mind. He's 11 years old, very self-aware. And he goes, Mom, I'm just feeling so anxious and just feeling like, you know, things aren't right. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he couldn't really explain in words what he meant. He just said, things just don't feel right. And I said, well, what's going on, right? And what I ultimately gathered was that he's in a book club. He was behind on reading his book at school. The book club was meeting the next morning. It was time to go to bed. He hadn't finished the pages he was supposed to finish before the next day. And I said, well, would it help if you just stayed up a little bit later, read a little bit more? I said, but really, is it going to be a bad thing if you didn't finish the book? And I said, there could be other people who maybe didn't get to have time to finish either. Right. And he goes, they could kick me out. And I said, I don't think they're going to kick you out, right? This is a school assignment. So I'm pretty confident he's not going to get kicked out. But that's, and then, so I was able to use that. Is that true? Did they tell you they would kick you out if you didn't, you know, read to the pages? He said, no. And I said, so you created that in your mind. And he said, right. Well, yeah. And then I had another situation with my daughter who was like, oh, I feel so anxious. And I said, well, what do you mean? I was driving her to a birthday party and she goes, no. She goes, I said, well, what do you mean you're anxious? I said, do you not want to go? They were going ice skating. I said, are you scared to go ice skating? And she goes, no. She goes, I'm super excited about the birthday party, but I'm just a little anxious for it all too. You know, she goes, I'm just curious, like who all's going to come and, you know, what all we're going to do. And, you know, and I was like, oh, so this is a good anxious. She goes, yeah, this is a good anxious. Right.
Oh, Sandy, this is exactly, you know, like I said, Glennon said this should be a Bible. And here's why. Glennon and Abby were talking about when you create your own language for things, that it really does help you to be able to express them. So same thing. Mm-hmm. But one of the things they talked about, which you're talking about with your daughter, is they made up a word, skited.
Yes.
So I'm scared and excited because they can anxious and excitement can feel a lot the same. You know, your heart rate, you might feel a little, you know, tension, your palms start to sweat. So it feels the same, but they're very different. And yet skited means I'm feeling these same feelings. I mean, even just talking about it, I feel my body getting that way, right? I'm skited. I'm excited, but I'm still anxious and nervous. But the point is they came up with a word. Yes. They understood in their family. Now they talk about it all the time. So whether it's in your relationship, one-on-one with someone or your family or your community, again, it's the power of putting the language down that really helps us to be able to do that. And I think that's a beautiful thing. The other one that reminds me of what you're saying, that Brené talks about a little later in the book that I've been using too with my kids. Don't you love it when we learn things and we practice on our children?
Yes.
But I think it's good. If I knew these things when I was 13, this would be lovely.
Right.
But I said, I just read another thing. And this is what I read. This is a different conversation. I said, it was the rule of five. Is it going to matter in 5 minutes? Is this going to matter in 5 hours? Are you still going to be this worked up in 5 days? Is this really going to bother you in 5 months? How about 5 years? Again, it creates perspective once we realize, okay, in 5 years, I'm not even going to remember this. 5 months, you know, okay, yeah, you're right. Let me just be mad for 5 minutes or 5 days or whatever it is. But when we create that perspective, we immediately are still asking the same kind of question. Is it true? Is that really right? Is our perception right? But if we create the distance again, it says, okay, I need to chill out about this a little bit. So exactly. I think that's a really awesome thing that she talks about. And I use it on the daily myself again.
You know, that's two examples you gave of like creating distance from that problem or that situation or that feeling even. And that's so true. And I love that you just shared you shared an example of like how you mentally created physical distance, right? In your mind. Mm-hmm. But then you talked about creating distance from a time standpoint.
Right.
And that's completely different perspective. Right. And I think that's so helpful because you're right. Sometimes it's about, I've got to make a decision and it can feel so completely overwhelming in that moment, but you're right. A week from now, is it really going to matter? Probably not as much as you think it is going to matter right now. Right. So that's,
and it shows how quickly we can blend with our emotions, how quickly we can allow them to tell us how we're feeling and, you know, to just create that distance a little bit. I love, I had read this before, and then Brené talks about it again, that Jon Kabat-Zinn describes overwhelm as this, things are unfolding faster than you can manage it. Mm-hmm. And I say this all the time to clients, don't move faster than you can feel.
Oh, interesting.
When we're 5 steps ahead in where we are in our day or in our life, and you know, we need to go back to step one to really get a feel for what's going on there, we're off kilter. We're not allowing ourselves to feel the current space. So immediately again, when we get into that present, we're feeling here and then we can go forward. But when we're in that overwhelm, it's usually because we are 6 days ahead.
Yes. Yes.
I love that. He also suggests, and this is hard for me, Sandy, I'm going to admit, he also suggests that when you're overwhelmed, the best cure is mindful play or doing nothing. I got so anxious. I was like, wait a second. My go-to is to write a to-do list and to get shit done.
Yes, I 100% agree.
Because then I'm like,
well,
if I have stuff done, I'm not overwhelmed anymore. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. I'm going to have to sit with that one.
Well, yeah. You and I've talked about this before. I've said this to you. I'm like, meditation stresses me out. Because I just sit there and think of everything I'm not getting done in the moment that I'm spending meditating. Right. And I'm missing the whole point, right? I mean, I get that. But you helped me to also see that I needed to kind of redefine what meditation is for me.
Right.
And
it
could be, you know, stopping, chilling, listening to a song, right? Or just taking, like you said, taking that moment to pause.
Yeah.
Or like
30 seconds.
Right.
Yeah.
And I find for me is I, like you, I start to write a to-do list, right? And the to-do list for me, I've learned actually ends up creating more stress. But the reason why that's my go-to is because it allows me to kind of like organize or section out my day. But it's also what I've ultimately learned is it is me stopping and taking that moment to write. Mm-hmm. So now instead of writing my to-do list, which I have to admit, I've got sticky notes everywhere now. So there's less of a to-do list and sticky notes everywhere. But now I try to write in my journal, or I try to write, I like poetry. So I try to write some poetry. Okay. I just stopping and taking that moment to write for me is something that helps me to just get back into that moment and be a little more present. Right. I think it manifested into a to-do list. And then I learned that was actually creating more stress for me,
because the to-do list is really a figment of our imagination, right? It's not actually we don't have to do those things. We just put them on a list. So then we think we have to.
But, and I know that I came from a family, right? We're a product of our environment where being productive and getting things done in a day and accomplishing something is rewarded and that's what you're supposed to do. And I think going into where Brené jumps into chapter 2 and you start comparing yourself to others, that's what I'm doing ultimately.
Yeah.
Is I'm like, I'm not as productive as this person. This person gets so much more work done in a day than I do.
Right.
Why can't I be more productive? And why am I not getting more work done? And then there's that internal narrative of where I'm beating myself up and giving myself a hard time and not showing myself compassion. But that's what it comes down to.
Yeah,
I'm looking at everyone else around me and I'm comparing myself to them, which is the worst mistake to make right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like the story she talks about swimming. She uses swimming as a meditation. It is something that she needs in her life and it really helps her to get centered. But immediately when she gets in that lane, she will shift into what's happening to the person next to her and how fast they're going or their, you know, ability to have form or whatever. And she completely not only loses the alone time and the meditation she needs, but then she even said she's even hurt herself trying to keep up. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I think many people can relate to that feeling of, you know, we can hit the lane markers and be off course immediately. And, you know, it's simply just remembering to focus on your journey and checking, you know, checking your lane, staying in your lane and just doing what you do well. I think comparison really does. It's the thief of joy. I just feel like it's, and you were talking earlier about a creativity killer. Comparison is it's literally like pulling a wet blanket over your dreams because we're thinking so much about others. We can't even give ourselves the energy that's needed.
So going back to the example you gave before, and I don't want to bring up any bad memories for you, but there was such a good example before where the gentleman shut you down and said, you don't have a right to speak in this room. I suspect, I don't know, I'm not in his head, but I would suspect that maybe he had a little resentment there that you felt confident enough to speak up and say something when really it was the resentment he had was in himself for maybe not being confident enough to speak up, whether it be in that moment or other moments that he, you know, felt like he resented himself maybe for not doing that. And I'm not saying that that's what happened, but that could be an example. But when we do compare ourselves to others, suddenly we start to resent people.
Right,
you know, we look at what everyone else has or, you know, one of the things you might admire about someone is that I have a really good friend of mine that's very outspoken. She's not afraid to say what she thinks or feels. And I love that about her. But sometimes in that moment, it can be like, oh, did she really say that? Like, right. I would never have the guts to say that. Right. And then I look at myself and go, well, why am I not more courageous when it comes to those things? So it's not about her. It's about me and what right. I'm feeling and thinking in that moment. And like how I'm like, oh, I just wish I could be more like that. But again, that's the danger of comparison.
Right. Absolutely. But you're right. It is about us. And the good news is that we have the opportunity to choose.
Yes.
How it makes us feel. And so when we realize that we're comparing, it's literally asking that question to ourselves, huh, what's going on here? And how is it helping me to compare? You know, and when we choose connection over comparison, we all of a sudden can say, oh, good for you. I'm going to go back to what I'm doing now, you know, or right. we can support one another. We can praise one another. We can celebrate each other. Which is those, my two favorite words, as I said earlier, the Schadenfreude and Freudenfreude.
Yes. Yes.
This is one of my very favorite things. Again, talked to my kids about it the other day, you know, about good friends and this, mm-hmm. you know, Schadenfreude is when you, derive pleasure from someone else's misfortune. So I right. picture like the evil villains in the Disney shows or, you know, the bullies that get excited because it makes them feel more powerful. Right. And it never builds a lasting connection, but the Freudenfreude is the enjoyment of success. And so it's literally saying, you know, good friends aren't afraid of your light. In fact, they're going to cup their hands around your flame. If a strong wind comes, meaning a strong wind could be a loss, a grief, a disappointment, a frustration, other people trying to bring you down, like all that's the wind, right? So mm-hmm. your friends will come along and cup your flame to protect it from going out. They're not afraid that your flame's brighter. They want to encourage your flame because they see you as a shiny, beautiful thing in this world. And so I ask my kids all the time, is that person putting, you know, cupped hands around your flame?
Mm-hmm.
Are they helping you shine? If not, screw them. Not worth it.
Right.
They want to blow it out themselves, or they're worried, right? So let it go and also encouraging them to do the same thing. Whose flame are you protecting?
Right.
Show up as that kind of a friend.
And it's so, and you just said something that really resonated with me too. It's when we think about who our friends are and how they respond to us in moments like that. And like you said, are they, you know, protecting your flame and helping you keep that flame going, or are they not? And when they're not, what a great opportunity for you to say, you know what, maybe you're not the right person in my life. And maybe I shouldn't surround myself with people like you. And I struggle with that sometimes. I mean, we all want to be liked, mm-hmm. right? I want to be liked by everyone. I want to, you know, just be accepted and be liked and all that. But, you know, a friend of mine recently said, as I was saying, talking about another friend of mine. And I said, you know, I just don't feel like they like me. This person doesn't like me very much, or they're just, you know, my interactions with them are weird and awkward. And they make comments that are kind of hurtful to me. And she looked at me and she said, then they're not your people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not your people. And what a freeing moment that
was. The best advice.
I mean, it was such a freeing moment. I was like, you're right. Okay with the fact that there are some people who are my people and some people who aren't my people. That's right. Okay. Cause you know what? Maybe I'm not their people.
Yeah.
And I get that too. And I respect that, but it took that perspective for me to be able to grasp that and say, oh, well, that's okay. And you know, I have a completely different outlook
right
on those people now. And even a different relationship.
Yeah.
Right. And not necessarily in a bad way, actually in a good way, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. just accepting that, you know what, you're not my people, but that's okay.
Absolutely.
Right. I still respect you,
yes.
but we don't have to do this.
Yes. This
false interaction, yes. right?
And this freedom pretending. That you talked yes. about. Yeah. It's so true. I had the same advice given to me. I remember feeling like I would show up for lots of things and you could call it FOMO, but also I never wanted to be lonesome. I just want to be with people because I believe in community and being together and belonging. But even though I was with people, I always felt lonely. And I would leave a situation. I'd be like, wow, that was not life-giving. What's going on there? Well, I was just continuing to fill my life with things to do, to be social and to be with people, but wasn't creating room for my people. Who are my people? You know, I went to improv and I met some people that I'm like, wow, I'm so like you. I decided to work at Trader Joe's for a little while because they're fun and exciting and I love the environment. Great. My people, you know, you look all over. I met Sandy.
Yes. So
there are people all over the place that when you create the room, all of a sudden it's like these little light bulbs go off and you're like, oh, you know, and the freedom. Yes. Yeah. The freedom you feel is beautiful. So yeah, I would encourage anyone listening. If they're not your people, they're not your people.
Fine. That's right. I totally agree. We've covered so much today. And truth be told, we've only scratched the surface on the first two chapters, really. But I mean, that's why this book is so brilliant and I think so important. And you're right, Glennon's depiction of this should be the family Bible. I fully support that because I think there's so much here that can really help us all engage with each other better, understand one another, and have stronger relationships. So this has been great. For those of you who are listening, we're going to continue this discussion, not today, but we are going to continue to kind of break down some of these chapters and talk about how we can, you know, use this information to help, you know, really figure out our own emotional map and learn, get to know ourselves better, right? So that we can engage with others even better. So Beth, thank you so much. This has been an awesome discussion. We will continue the discussion. So be on the lookout for others. But Beth, as usual, I gained so much insight from you. And I know that our audience would probably, you know, like to learn more about you. So tell us how people can, you know, connect more with you. What, you know, give us your website, your social media, because you put a lot of great insights out there for everyone.
Awesome. Thanks. So, you know, well, first of all, the way to find me is you can find me on my website, The Grounded Canary, social media. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, The Grounded Canary. And the reason that I would love the opportunity to talk to anybody is like when we were talking about it today, I get so excited about this kind of conversation. I know, Sandy, I scare you. And I know sometimes you don't want to go there. But what's so exciting for me is when people are just willing to be a little curious. Mm. They talk a little bit later in the book about curiosity versus interest. And curiosity is a space around a space from which we say, I want to know more. I'm invested. My heart is in this. And when people are curious, and you know, as we've talked today, or as you're thinking about some of these concepts, if you find that you're curious, but you just need a little help digging deeper, I want to help you. I want to help you for, you know, find that next step, because sometimes it's just about uncovering the onion, or, you know, bringing down the layers of the onion, or uncovering part of you. And the further that you can go to understand, the more freedom that is found. And when you create that energy in one space, it starts to develop and explode and implode in the other areas of your life, which is a beautiful thing. So yeah, I would love to talk to anybody that's interested, because I want more people to experience this freedom. Every day I want it. Every day I want
people to experience this. Well, for certain, I agree with everything you just said. I don't always enjoy the work, but I always appreciate it. And I have gotten to a place, the more of this work I do, actually the less afraid of it I am and the more curious I am. So I'm actually finding myself, even when I'm not on a call with you necessarily, digging into some of this stuff and doing some of this work on my own, which is exactly what you want us to do, right? That's exactly what you're training us and teaching us how to do that for yourself. So again, thank you so much. This has been awesome. I can't wait to continue this discussion. Yeah, so thank you to our listeners. You've been listening to the Her Journey Told podcast, and it is powered by Pivotal Moments Media. And if you want to learn more about Pivotal Moments and mental wellness and mental fitness, please go to our website at pivotalmomentsmedia.com. Thanks, and look for future episodes. You've been listening to the Her Journey Told podcast, powered by Pivotal Moments. For more inspirational content, go to pivotalmoments.org. I'm Sandy Lutton. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to keep an eye out for more episodes where podcasts can be heard. See you next time.